Backseat Producers, Episode 155, The Men Who Stare at Goats. Hey, this is Tony.
Hey, this is Daryl.
And this is David.
And we are the Backseat Producers.
Turn this into our own rock opera.
Sweet. All right, so next week we're going to talk about Operation Mindcrime, episode 156.
Bull.
No, we are.
Okay.
You aren't.
You're correct.
Because you are a toolbox.
No, because I hate music.
That's bogus. How can you hate music?
Easily.
All music or just certain eras?
I'm just not into the whole music thing. There's a whole keeping up with things I don't really enjoy. Then there's like a bigger douchebaggery about music than there is about anything else, which is the, well, my music is more obscure than your music.
There is some of that.
There's a lot of that.
Yeah.
I don't even try to keep it anymore. I just keep reminding the past because there's so many things I missed the first time around. Now if I don't,
I have the music I like. I like it. I don't care if anybody else does. In fact, I kind of liked it. More people don't because it's easier to go to concerts. But then it's harder to go to concerts because
they don't tour.
I had to wait.
When they tour, you are right there.
When they tour in the United States. That's the kind of thing. Like a couple of years ago, one of the bands I listened to did their first U.S. tour in like something like 8 or 10 years.
Was this Whitesnake?
No.
Did you go to that ill-fated concert?
No, I did not. I used to listen to Whitesnake a lot.
Oh, man, Tony, come on. We went to the Evanescence concert.
It is still the
only
night.
Because Amy Lee is incredibly hot.
That's true.
And she's better looking in person.
She's not with Evanescence anymore.
She was banging that dude from Nickelback? No.
Evanescence.
No. She was banging this dude from Nickelback. Mm. And then she and him started doing stuff. Like together, vocally,
yeah.
not banging, but vocally as well.
Right,
and it was terrible because that guy is a douchebag. Maybe it was Seether. I don't know. Nickelback, Seether. That whole crowd just kind of fades into one for me.
I like Nickelback. I'm one of those people.
Bleed is like blah 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 Nickelback, and I'm like Nickelback's crime is that they're average.
Yeah,
like
Nickelback's crime is that they're mainstream.
That pretty much describes most rock bands.
Yeah, they've discovered the formula, and then they only tweak it just a little bit for every different song.
And
yeah,
you know
that's
what?
Good business.
They're making money.
Yeah,
that's like last week I checked out from the library Some Kind of Monster, the Metallica. Documentary that they did like 7 or 8 years ago, maybe 6 or 7 years ago. And I'm a Metallica fan from the 90s. I didn't do the old Metallica, but like when the Black Album came out, I was in a room. I roomated with four guys in college. There were four of us in our apartment. All four of us had very different musical tastes. We all owned a copy of the Black Album. But it was one of those things.
It was the Sublime album.
Yeah. Different decade. That's same idea, different decade.
Yep.
But yeah, I remember like Lars, they interviewed Lars the drummer and like, yeah, so what do you say to people who say you sold out? It's like, we sold out at Madison Square Garden, we sold out at the Coliseum. Yeah, we sell them out everywhere. You know.
Nothing succeeds like success.
Exactly. And it makes you a target. Anyway, that's not what we're here to talk about.
No. Although it is very in the theme of the movie.
Yeah, I guess. For whatever theme that might be. Yeah, so tonight we're talking about The Men Who Stare at Goats.
Stranger Than Truth.
Oh, is it?
Oh my god, this movie is so weird.
It is a bizarre flick.
I expected a weird movie. I was even weirded out by what I saw.
Yeah, I was not disappointed that I got a weird movie. Yeah. Because that's what I expected. And this is one of those cases when the marketing that you get for a movie doesn't lie.
it didn't lie, but I thought it was going to be funnier. Like, it was pretty funny. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah. It was more in a satirical way, but not in a go-for-the-throat way.
Yeah. It was situationally humorous, but not punchline, you know, set-up punchline kind of humor.
George Clooney was hysterical in almost everything he did.
George Clooney, as a comedic actor, he does that well.
Yeah, he was. I think George Clooney's probably a douchebag, but since I only see him in movies, I don't really care. But in most movies, he comes off as a douchebag. In this movie, he was not a douchebag. When he's this guy in movies, he's much better.
Yeah, kind of distracted, kind of flighty, but believes himself.
Yes.
And he does that in other movies, but this one is one of those ones that it works really well in.
And the cast in this movie was ridiculous.
Yeah.
Ewan McGregor, George Clooney, Jeff Bridges, what's his face?
Kevin Spacey. Robert Patrick.
Robert Patrick. Goddamn Patrick. And those scenes with him was awesome.
Yeah.
And I know I'm forgetting other people who were in this.
Yeah, I mean, there's a number of actors where you're like, that guy. So, I liked it.
I liked it too.
I thought it was weird, but I liked it.
I enjoyed it too, but like I say, this is more of a thinking man's comedy than a real pratfall.
Yeah.
It's enjoyable. You can watch it on a whole bunch of different levels.
Yeah, and it's one of those kind of movies that, I mean, there are some things that, a lot of comedies, you quote a line, and it's like everybody remembers the scene, and it's kind of funny. This movie doesn't have quite as much of that because it's the scene. It's the setup of the scene.
And the execution of the scene.
Yeah.
That produces an experience that isn't captured in a
the general moment. The general at the beginning, who's just staring at the wall.
Staring at the wall.
In which case, you know, the camera is the wall, and you're not really sure what he's staring at, because he's staring straight into the camera, stands up, walks around his desk, and just takes off running
and going into the other room.
Yeah.
Going into the other room. Yeah.
Bump.
Yeah.
Then it starts.
Which is a great, again, for a great dovetail for the end of the movie, too.
Right. Right,
then it starts the explanation. Oh, and the red-haired chick from Lost was his ex-wife.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'm going to go ahead and say this movie, there's not really any spoilers. Well, I guess there is that one scene.
There is one spoiler.
There's one spoiler toward the end. But, yeah. We can save that. It's not really going to... I think
that's the point of the movie, though. Which is, I guess, fair. All right.
Yeah.
Well, the one thing about this movie, too, it leads you to believe how much of this is just pure BS and how much of this is actually true. And the way the Clooney comes off in this whole thing is he so believes in this stuff. But yet you get this feeling that he really kind of has this little tinge of doubt here and there.
Well,
and not only... I mean, I wish we were talking about the end of the movie.
You know what? Let's just go ahead and say we're going to spoil it. Because
perfect.
Because...
It doesn't think, mean anything out. It's the journey, not the. It's the journey, not the
right.
destination.
I think this the conversation here lends itself more to. All right, you can look at this movie two ways.
Yeah.
One is everything that they present happens.
Yes.
Or it
what
doesn't.
Or what you're doing is you're reading Ewan McGregor's story after the fact that he wrote while blitzed out on drugs.
Yes.
Which is. Most likely what happens.
Exactly.
Because at the end, you see him at the typewriter, the computer, or whatever, and he stands up and he's like, I'm done.
And runs through the wall.
Runs through the wall.
Literally. Doesn't break the wall, phases straight through the wall. Yeah.
So. Yeah.
Let's put the setup of the movie in place here, how this all gets going.
George Clooney's goddamn hilarious.
Yeah. Well, and the other weird thing about this movie is how non-linear it is. The story is
jumps back and forth quite a bit between the 80s and the current day Iraq.
So current day Iraq and like 4 or 5 points in current day.
Yeah, and it's a time period between 2003 and
at some point when first we part were
of
at
the,
war,
the first part of the 1980s when all the new age.
Well, that's 2003 is the beginning of the movie with Ewan McGregor, mm-hmm. where his life falls apart and he goes on his journey.
His wife has an affair with that one-armed guy.
One-armed guy with a big black claw for a hand. Like, she's really getting into it.
She's rubbing this.
There's a fight scene between you and McGregor. The guy is choking you and McGregor with the fake arm.
Yep.
Oh my god. There was that and there was something else that was so goddamn funny when I saw it. I almost peed my pants.
Well, the fact is when he's talking to his wife on the phone, he's watching her across the yard in the house opposite, and he's talking to her and he comes in the her new lover comes in and says, "Is he going to get his stuff out of here now?" Jeez. I'm standing right here.
So he devises a plan by which he goes over to report on the Iraq war to show how much of a badass he is.
Right.
Yes, he does what every man who's ever had a broken heart, he goes to war. Or at least he thinks he's going to try.
So the prime story is basically Ewan McGregor's story.
Yes.
And it's his discovery of this series of individuals. And it's the first guy...
The first guy comes to him.
Well, no, he is sent on he's working for this little podunk paper.
Oh, yeah.
He's sent to interview this guy. And he thinks, okay, this is just a fluff
piece. This guy was awesome.
And the more he's talking to this guy about all of these weird things he did while he was in the special corps in the army of training these new age warriors. And he's sitting there and like, okay, this guy is just yanking my crank here, and he's nuts. But the guy is so sincere about it. He starts to
videotape. He pulls out the videotape. Yeah, he's like, yeah. So they trained us to kill animals.
Yes,
and
yeah, hamsters.
And I killed my hamster. He's like, what? It's like, you wanna see?
Yeah.
So I'm imagining this guy's gonna pull out a baggie or something. The next scene, they're sitting in front of a video, and they're watching this videotape, and the hamster is just staring at the
camera.
It was staring at the hamster wheel. It was just staring at the wheel, and he's like,
he's giving this running commentary.
No, I've been staring at it for like 3 hours at this point. Have you ever seen a hamster do that? And he's like, well, to be honest, I've never really owned a hamster before, but it does seem kind of unusual that he would just be staring at the wheel like he's in some kind of psychotic state.
And then it just
keels over. He's like, wow, that's weird. And then it hops back up.
Mom didn't want me to show you the one where the hamster dies.
Just where it acted weird. They thought that would be less... less odd or something. Oh my god.
Melina was watching this with me and she fell asleep like the first half of the movie and she's like, do they hurt animals in this movie? And I'm like, oh, they kill a goat. And she's like, I'm not watching this movie. And I'm like, you should really finish the movie. It's a redemption plot.
Yeah. You could say that.
Well, anyway, he's primed already, and he writes this story, and then he forgets it for a while. At this point, his life starts falling apart with his wife leaving him for another man. He ends up, now he's going to be this great embedded, you know, he visions of being Ernie Pyle for Iraq. He gets as far as Kuwait, and this is where he meets up with George Clooney, kind of by accident.
Yeah, he just kind of runs into him.
At the restaurant.
Well, he's at the border. He can't get through because his press credentials won't get approved. And then he sees all these people who are contracting for the waste disposal in Iraq, and they've all got credentials. So he's going to try and hit George Clooney up for
a ride along.
Right.
So he can finally get a scoop.
And Clooney mentions his name, and it's a Lynn something.
I'm trying to get it here.
But anyway, he hears the name, and he remembers the name From that first interview.
Mm-hmm, that this guy, the George Clooney character, was sort of the one of the stars.
Yeah, one of the rock stars of the program.
He's, Lynn Cassidy.
Yes. Yeah, so, yeah, he's one of the guys who can really do this. He's good at it.
Mm-hmm. He's a Jedi.
He is a Jedi.
Or at least in his own opinion, he is.
He's a goddamn American Jedi.
He's a goddamn American Jedi.
Well, anyway, Lynn tries to get away from this guy, and he pursues him into the depths of the kitchen where he jumped at, and he tells him the story. Okay, I met up with one of your comrades in the program, mm-hmm. and... He takes him back to his room and kind of gives him a little bit more insight as to what happened.
Well, and he kind of drills him, too, because he's like, so what color were the chairs in the bar? And how many lights are in this room without looking? And then he explains to him, a super soldier knows these things. they just walk through a room and know how many power outlets there are.
Yeah, he starts really laying it on at this point. And he's really serious about this stuff.
You learned that at level one.
It's level one.
And then he whips out the training manual they were used.
Right.
Which is all this new agey stuff in it about becoming warrior monks. And whatnot. And this is when we start flashing back to the
Jeff
beginnings.
Bridges. Oh, yeah. My God. The Jeff Bridges stuff was awesome.
Yeah, they did a lot of cool stuff. They did some good work with makeup to make these guys look younger. Because
in the Clooney flashbacks, he looks young.
Well, most of that is... I would venture most of Clooney's look is just dyeing his hair.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Dyeing his hair and his mustache.
He looks goddamn young.
That 80s porn mustache.
That 80s porn mustache.
That was awesome.
Ridiculous.
So yeah, they flash back to Jeff Bridges.
Who, instigating the program. Yeah, starting the program out with the Army, convincing them, okay, we got to investigate this all this new agey stuff to see if it has any potential for military applications.
But before that, didn't they even show him in Vietnam, or am I flashing?
Well, there was, no, you're right. There was a guy before him.
No, that was Jeff Bridges in Vietnam.
Okay.
The one who got shot?
Okay.
Yeah. And he's telling... You know,
it
he's
didn't
telling,
look like him either.
Okay.
It didn't, but his... Well, they had a lot of green face paint and stuff. At first, I didn't know who it was.
I didn't think it was him, but then...
It was him.
Yeah, but then they keep going with it. I'm like, oh, that must have been him.
They used green face paint to mask his age.
Well, the genesis of the story
that's
is...
That's a good move.
That it was. Most of the soldiers at that time had a hard time killing people because they were just too trained not to do... It was just too much against their ethics to do it.
Yeah, like 15-20% of new soldiers would not shoot to
high.
Would not shoot to kill, and yeah, they had the scene where the guy's running across the forest and every shot is fired like 10 feet above his head.
The guy just turns, slowly takes aim and shoots Jeff Bridges.
Right in the chest.
He's like, seriously, what the shit?
So he uses that as his great epiphany that they
there
need to mentally.
Well, he had a great epiphany while laying in the hospital.
Right.
But he had a vision.
Yeah, and he gets he gets the idea that you know they need to mentally train and become a higher level of human.
So then he goes on Hippie Fest.
That was the fun part. He actually convinces his superiors to fund him to do all this undercover work with this new agey stuff to see if there's any potential military applications to it. Well,
hanging
after
out,
6
hanging
years...
Hanging out with hippies in the hot tubs and jumping off the roof and all that other
6 years later,
stuff.
He comes back with his report and he actually convinces them to start up a new part of the Army, which he refers to as the... 1st Earth Brigade.
Yes.
And they're going to train in
first,
all...
1st Earth Army.
1st Earth Army. Well, 1st Earth
like
Army.
That.
Yeah,
1st like
Earth
that.
Army. That was devoted to peace rather than total war, or total peace and total war.
My favorite thing is that they call themselves Jedi. Throughout the whole movie, mm-hmm. there's George Clooney telling Obi-Wan that he's a goddamn Jedi.
That was great. Well, and then the big, the last thing they say in the movie, which is, we'll talk about that, we'll get there, but that's beautiful, especially coming from Obi-Wan.
He's a goddamn American Jedi.
He is? Okay, so so we're getting some of the history of the program from Jeff Bridges. From Clooney telling the story about Jeff Bridges.
And how the whole thing got started and how they more or less put this whole program together to create these Jedi warriors and warrior monks.
Right.
Who were kind of like the antithesis of the current 1980s army. That they were going to essentially retrain everybody mentally.
Yeah, and he kind of talks about his beginning in the program and how he's kind of brought into it and
how starts sort of to excel
the at new agey stuff kind of affects him and let's see, and then they introduce Kevin Spacey's character, who's just a dick.
Yeah, that guy's awesome.
Yeah, congratulations. Sorry it doesn't work out.
Yes, the guy who could see into the future and lift, 80-pound weights with his balls.
Well, that was another guy.
That was another guy.
Yeah, that was the guy that
developed that knife fighting style.
The shock and awe knife attack.
Yeah, just jump at you with both knives, even though you had a high percentage of stabbing yourself than your opponent.
Yeah, that guy was awesome. It's like, yeah, he developed this he's the only person outside. He's the only non-Korean, to achieve this certain level of mastery. And they show him just standing there grunting, just from chest up, and then he's just sweating and grunting and red-faced. And then they show between his legs from behind chains hanging down. Like, yeah, he could dangle 80-pound sandbags from his testicles. They show this wall of guys just watching, and the one guy raises his hand, sir, what's the practical application of this? Oh, my God.
Oh, it gets out of control at this point.
Yeah.
It's already out of control.
It's been out of control. That guy
sets the tone for the movie.
Oh.
And the fun thing is they're going through their training. There's these glimpses that these guys really can do this stuff.
Well, one of the things we kind of missed is there's a dude at the beginning, the general who believes he can phase through walls. Mm-hmm. Part of the reason they were able to get away with this is because he was a little whacked out to begin with. He was reading like all this weird communist stuff, like all these bizarre communist
one
plots.
One of the best plots in the movie is the Russians thought we were doing spy research or psi research, so we started doing psi research to counter them, but we weren't doing psi research originally.
Why did they start this program? Because they thought we were using because they got intelligence when we contacted the Nautilus when it was under the polar ice caps telepathically. Did we do that?
No, that was a French hoax.
No, the French made that up. But now that they think we're doing it, we need to do it to counter them doing it.
This is a perfect 80s logic.
Oh man, that was good.
Yeah, so that was kind of the kickoff. That was the base for how they had somebody kind of on their side.
Mm-hmm. They got enough high-level support.
In the high-level support,
that they actually got funding to try this out.
Yeah, they actually, if you believe that the story is accurate, they actually did have results. I mean, because a couple times they go to Clooney and they're like, we need you to find where this hostage is. And then he would give them the answer. And then they would go rescue the hostage. So
that was his remote viewing thing.
Yeah. It's level 2. Or 3.
No, level two was when it was being able to decide immediately, to make decisions immediately.
Yeah, your intuition.
Your intuition. Thank you. That's it. Like you have to know whether to go left or right. Now, right. Like so. Wait a minute. We've been sitting here for like 3 hours. How is that immediate? Fine. Boom!
Right through a mine.
Oh, and they get picked up by those Iraqi guys who end up taking them hostage. Oh, man.
And this is where we get the first big interlude and interaction between Clooney and Ian McGregor about the whole program itself, what it was trying to accomplish, that they were going to essentially, you know, destroy their enemies with positive thoughts. Anyway, they finally get the lid into the truck and we're going to be traded for another guy. So when they get there, it turns out he's trying to send them psychic messages to put down their guns. And for some reason, they all start shooting at each other. Bullets going everywhere. And guess who they're rescued by? The freaking the Small Business Administration, who's trying to come to Iraq to help Iraqis start small businesses.
Their plan is to make a mint.
Yes.
Yeah.
That was Robert Patrick comes in. Yeah.
The goddamn D-1000.
I mean, one of the things that was really cool is they do an equally good job of making Clooney sound like a whack job, but then giving you hints
but then
that
legitimizing
maybe he's not as crazy as he seems. Well, like that whole thing about that little device that he had that he kept torturing you and McGregor with in the one scene.
Oh, yes, his non-lethal
He's like,
weapons.
Oh, yeah. If you'd see this on the ground, you wouldn't think anything of it. Eyeball!
Ow! Stop hitting me!
I love every time he uses some piece of equipment from there. There's always hilarity ensues. Like, he's like, this is how we cook burgers with only the power of the sun. The whole day passes.
It doesn't work.
So he's like, this didn't work.
That and there's the scene with where they're being tested by Jeff Bridges,
mm-hmm.
and it's Clooney and
Kevin Spacey
and that other guy.
I don't remember.
Jeff Bridges was
administering the test.
And the one guy's like, yeah, I see something cylindrical. It's a pencil. Spacey's like, this is Maud, the spirit guide. And I don't remember what.
Clooney said it was a mug.
It's a tin cup, a tin mug. And then they go to Clooney, and he's like, yeah, it's a man sitting in a chair. Opens it up, and it's the Lincoln Memorial. So, I mean, they do little things like that to kind of legitimize it, if you believe his story.
Yeah.
Because Clooney seems kind of whacked out on drugs through most of his, even his exchanges with Ewan McGregor.
Yeah, but goddamn, okay, so the scene where the two of them are in captivity is the funniest scene in the whole goddamn movie, and I cannot for the life of me remember why it is so funny.
I don't.
He convinces him to do something when the people come in, like, son of a bitch, never mind. It was so funny.
No. I think that's the joke.
Mm-hmm.
Was that the joke? Was when he was saying it was invisible?
Yeah, level 3, you're invisible. Well, after all their tribulations and whatnot, they meet. We get to sort of
joke
the,
me.
The tragedy of the program, where they were experimenting with. Well, Jeff Bridges was experimenting with LSD on one of the recruits, and he goes a little nuts and starts shooting people.
No, it wasn't Jeff Bridges, it was Kevin Spacey.
Oh, Kevin Spacey, okay.
Yeah, because he thought that there was a CIA program that would enhance his mental abilities, mm-hmm. but he wanted to test it on the new guy first.
It was some sort of hallucinogenic drug.
But LSD. It was LSD. Okay. Yeah, they showed him like pouring LSD into this guy's cup
He was giving him like a mega dose of the stuff.
Yeah,
enough to stun an elephant.
The guy starts freaking out and throwing stuff and
breaking the whole place up,
tearing the place up, then walking out into the yard with a gun, nude, shooting people.
Shooting just randomly?
And then he finally ends up blowing his brains out.
But of course, in the subsequent investigation, the whole program falls apart.
Yes, sir. His group has been siphoning off funds to pay for hookers
and drugs.
To buy drugs for... Yeah, we never bought hookers.
That's a lie.
That's a lie.
We never put hookers.
It's a lie about the hookers.
It's a lie about the hookers.
And of course, that this program is completely disbanded at this point. And Bridges is kicked out of the army and disappears into the sunset. And we don't really know what happens to him. Well, The one thing he did is Kevin Spacey, before Clooney is kicked out, is he puts this supposed death touch on him.
The curse.
Yes, the curse.
He's, well, no, that happens. Yeah. Well,
as Clooney's leaving, as his hitch is up, because he's pretty much lost his heart in this thing.
I thought he felt he was cursed, though, because of the goat.
No.
Yeah.
Well, he does the goat. He kills the goat to prove that he can do it.
But
that's why he leaves.
Right, but then he felt that he was cursed because he used his powers for evil.
He felt that the cause was that it was over because he'd used his powers for evil. When he was leaving, Kevin Spacey comes out to meet him and then puts the touch of death on him.
Oh, okay.
So he thinks that sometime in the future he's going to die.
You're right. Yeah, he went over to the dark side.
Yeah. So I don't know where we are in the present day plot, but
that's when they all meet up back at the compound here, and guess who's all there?
Yeah, they're lost. At this point, they're lost in the desert, and they get picked up. And Clooney's looking rough. That the effect of having somebody with a blood vessel broken in their eye.
I'm tired of that. I've seen that for the rest of the movie. I'm tired of that.
They did it in Serenity too.
They didn't. Yeah, Mal had it.
Mal had it in Serenity.
Somebody else had it in something recently, and I was like, "Oh, stop that!"
It's disorienting. It's a cool effect because it seems so simple. I mean, it's probably just a contact lens, but damn, it's creepy looking.
It is creepy.
That's the idea.
Yeah, it's great because it's like you can tell that they're still
Terminator Salvation.
I haven't seen that yet.
The Terminator guy has it. Yeah, I'm not a big fan of that effect. Yeah, just show me the bruises. I don't need it. I don't need that level of realism.
We should have Dr. Luke on here talking about that wound.
His specialty is ears. That was the worst joke I think I could have gone for there. But I stand by it.
Okay. So, yeah, so they end up back at the compound, and
all the people they thought were gone or dead are all right there. There's Bill is back. Kevin Spacey is mm-hmm. back. Now, he's the head of the program.
Well, and he's a contractor.
Yes, he's a contractor. He's actually taken everything that they had from the 1980s original program and is kind of perverted it a little bit, but he used the same sales job on this administration as they did on the other one.
Yeah, instead of being a psychic, they're using it as psychological warfare.
Mm-hmm.
They're spinning it as psychological
warfare. Right, they're a psychops. They're a psychops team.
They're psyops, but they're psychological instead of psychic. at one point, Ewan McGregor puts out, "Your name is Sick." Psych!
And they wheel off all these crazy-ass programs that just make about as much sense as the first ones did. Yes, we're mutilating the corpses. We're no longer doing that.
Your wives are at home making love to Bart Simpson and... what's it? Somebody else.
I watched this movie weeks ago.
Burt Reynolds. Your wives are at home making love to Bart Simpson and Burt Reynolds.
That was the Iraqi psychops.
They needed to do a little better research on that.
And of course, ours isn't much better.
No. So they hook up with Jeff Bridges and
the dude abides.
The dude, as always, abides.
And they also find another load of goats that are ready to be sacrificed for their psychic experiments.
Yes.
And at this point, the Clooney goes a little off the deep end when he finds out they've picked up the one thing he decided he didn't want to be a part of.
He's been treading water in the deep end through this whole freaking movie, and he just lets himself go under.
And then when he finds out that Bill's sold out, he goes under.
Yeah.
Then he becomes despondent, and then I don't know what happens to Bill, but at some point, Bill decides enough is enough and begins training Ewan McGregor as a Jedi, and so then it becomes Phantom Menace.
Yes.
They're in a desert. Ewan McGregor's a Padawan. There's going to be a race later around the
dude,
compound.
The dude as Qui-Gon is pretty awesome.
Yes.
Yeah, they even Tai Chi moves up.
They even look similar.
Pretty screwed up.
They do.
They both have that bushy brown beard.
True.
And then there's a race later around the compound. It happens.
Well, anyway, the dude, Jeff Bridges, devises the plan to get back and get things back in the get back into the groove again.
Don't eat the eggs.
Don't eat the eggs. Or drink the water.
Wait, what?
Drinking the water all morning. Hot LSD in the water too.
They drink of it.
But I've taken so many of these, I'm pretty immune to them. Yeah. So everybody in the whole in the camp is tripping on acid.
The guards are freaking out, driving tanks through the walls, and
had a jolly good time doing it too.
Kevin Spacey, the one scene where they go and bust the other guys out of the detainment cells, and they're walking through the camp, and Kevin Spacey stops and puts a gun right in their faces, then turns it on himself and puts it in his mouth, and it was like, I thought he was going to do it.
Yeah,
it was like, man, I'm hungry.
Just runs off
at full speed ahead. We put LSD in the eggs and the main water supply. Wait, what? Yeah, that was good. Then Jeff Bridges gets into a helicopter.
Yeah.
Clooney steal the helicopter and go, quote unquote, fly it off into the sunset about as well as you can while you're tripping on LSD.
Yeah. They said it was an accident, but there were no bodies.
You never really know.
Yeah, you never really know, and like all shamans, they went back to the sky.
He says shaman, though. I hate when people say that.
Yeah.
What a shaman. Come on. Come on. Who here has not played WoW? Jesus Christ.
And at this point, our Ian McGregor character has completed his, quote unquote, someone completed his hero's journey.
And then he goes back a Jedi.
Yes.
He's on... To Revenge of the Clones, or Attack of the Clones.
Yes.
Because then he's the Jedi.
Yeah, he is the Jedi.
Well, he's going up, then he's following the mystery for the rest of the movie when he's the Jedi.
That's
boom,
true.
That's episode two right there.
All right, so he goes back and he writes a story. And he stands up, and he's given this, there's this big voiceover about, you know, how screwed up things are and how we really need the Jedi. As he's saying this, he's running full speed ahead at the wall and just phases through the wall.
The best part about that is, like, I wrote my story. And then, like, they show the newscast, and all the newscast says is...
the one little piece.
About Barney. About the psychological warfare, again, blasting Barney, the purple dinosaur, for 7 hours at a time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, they said the worst possible thing they could do to me, they ignored me.
Yep. So, we've talked through the whole plot of the movie.
So that movie happened.
That's going to sound good.
Well, the far part about all this thing is, they have the little card at the front of the movie says, everything about this movie is true. Or most everything about this film is true.
Yeah.
And the worst thing is, it is. Because there actually is a book out there called The Ministeriate Goats. It was written in 2004. And there was a documentary made on the BBC, a three-part documentary, which is one of which is called The Men Who Stare at Goats, where they pick up all this stuff and show just how much of it was really done.
Well, and Stingray is saying in the chat room, more of this is true, more of this movie is true than you'd believe. I don't know. I believe that quite a bit of it is true. We spent a lot of money on weird shit in the 80s. And the one guy even says, our biggest proponent was Ronald Reagan.
Right.
He loved Star Wars.
And all the occult stuff.
And the occult stuff, yeah. So, I mean, they found they had the right set of...
the conditions were just perfect.
Upper tier people to fund it, to support it, to fight for them, to back them, to protect them. But, yeah.
For several years.
Yeah. We think we're psychics. Oh, and we're going to prove it by taking heavy narcotics. And having the people in charge and administering the programs are taking heavy narcotics.
I'm in.
So...
Sold.
Yeah.
Well, actually, that sort of stuff was done years before that. There was a program in the CIA when LSD first came out to see if it could be weaponized. Well, and they did some pretty hideous experiments on some people who did not volunteer for this.
Right.
And some of them heads were screwed up for years and years and years. In fact, they even had some deaths due to suicide over it, which their families later found out that they had been given these drugs without their knowledge.
Yeah.
Yes, I agree with what was said. I am not reading Twitter.
Okay.
So there is a big element. This movie is actually kind of a compilation of several things that went on. Then just the 1980s came to a head. It just came visible as an open program. Yeah. Before that, all that other stuff like MK Ultra and the CIA secret LSD experiments were all underground, all black ops.
Mm-hmm.
I hear the words you are saying.
Anyway, if you listen to any late-night talk radio, this stuff pops up kind of all the time. And if you listen to these people, they sound so damn convincing.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll have you believing it towards the end.
And, I mean, that was the cool thing about this movie is mm-hmm. This movie was fantasy, sort of. I mean, it's all a matter of perspective and point of view. It's all true from a certain point of view.
Yeah.
Bringing back the Star Wars thing.
Mm-hmm.
Bringing back the Obi-Wan Kenobi thing.
Hmm. I'm not getting that.
Return of the Jedi.
Oh, okay.
When Luke is questioning Obi-Wan about, you know, why didn't you ever tell me? It's like, you told me my father died. Well, that's true from a certain point of view.
A certain point of view.
And that is the biggest Ween moment. That's the biggest Ween moment of Obi-Wan Kenobi. Listen, you gotta figure. A man
who Obi-Wan Kenobi was flat out freaking lying to that kid the whole time, pushing him toward a destiny that he wanted him to have.
You gotta figure. A man who will walk into the queen's room, or princess, or whatever the hell Amidala was, see the snakes, see the little droid thing, and then leap out of the window into Coruscant. He has no need to make up an elaborate story to tell Luke Skywalker. He just has to drop his robe and show him these massive clanking metal balls. And then Luke Skywalker will fall into line. Of course, since he's dead, that's a little more difficult than you'd think, but, you know.
And how old was Obi-Wan Kenobi in Star Wars Empire and Jedi? I was thinking about that the other day. He was unnaturally old for how old he should have been.
He had power over death, which aged him.
No. That aged him?
Disaged him.
It should have kept him younger. Sure. It aged him.
Well, he's living in a desert for 20-some years.
Well, no. It wouldn't have been that long.
I don't know why he moved to Tatooine.
To watch Luke.
Keep an eye on him.
To keep an eye on Luke. To protect Luke in case Vader ever came for him.
That's fine. That does make sense. I don't know why I thought that was weird.
No, that one actually makes sense. Bail watched Leia and Obi-Wan watched Luke.
Who's Bail?
Bail Organa, her father. Oh, come on.
Oh, come on. You come on.
I'm bringing the Star Wars knowledge.
I'm bringing something. I don't know what it is. It smells like fried turkey.
Yeah, 16 to 18 years. What's funny is if you read the novelization of the original Star Wars, they peg Luke at being 16 and Leia being 18. Truth. In text, they say Luke is 16 and Leia is 18.
Well, good thing they're twins.
Yeah.
Although they had to do it that way so Leia was legal.
That's
Otherwise,
true.
They lost significant interest. It's like the Hermione thing. Man, Hermione is hot. How old is she? She's not 18 yet. She's a great actress. She's 18 now. Man, that chick is hot. That chick has always been hot. Now that she's 18.
See, that's like Jennifer Connelly. I can speak about Jennifer Connelly in like Legend when she's not 17 yet because I was the same age she was.
Mm.
So at that point, we were both
I've never had that issue with Jennifer Connelly.
No, you haven't.
She has always been ripe for the plucking.
This is true. Leia had a fake ID. 18 is the drinking age on Alderaan.
Jennifer Connelly is aged like a fine wine.
Mm-hmm.
She's like the only person I've seen that gets better with time. She's still pretty hot.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's true. Yeah, whenever we had, at my last place of employment, we would have sent some people that would send us links that were...
To naked Jennifer Connelly?
No. They were things that we didn't necessarily want to see.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Lemonparty.org.
Oh.
Fire it up.
Meatspin.com.
Beach Hunt.
Anyway, we all had our own personal... brain bleach, as it were.
Brain bleach?
For myself and another gentleman, it was pictures of Miss Jennifer Connelly.
That's a good call. That's a good call.
Yes.
Cannot go wrong with that.
No.
pH balanced for a man. Yeah, there are no female lines in this movie. I don't remember any.
Except for the discussion with the wife where she tells him it's through.
I thought that was primarily with the one-armed dude.
She
doesn't have to say
She's the one that actually says it. But that's
stroking the fake arm?
Yeah. That's pretty much it, though.
Very deliberately. Why is it deliberately like that, Stingray?
Yeah, the woman... Yeah, the I think it's a Vietnamese woman. The one who gives Jeff Bridges the epiphany.
Mm-hmm.
She says something.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, there's really not much.
Something, something, something. No female lines, something. Well, IMDb is smarter than you are, Stingray. Stingray, you pumped for Archon or what?
I'm pumped for Archon.
Chubbed up over here already. Braiding my leg here.
All right, let's go ahead and call this a night.
That's all we have.